Blog Talk Radio.
Just a step, cries the sad man. Take a look down at the madman. Theater king's on. Silver wings fly beyond reason. From the flight of the seagull come the spread claws of the eagle. Only fear breaks the silence as we all kneel, pray for guidance. We'll be right back.
Freaky Darlings, and welcome to the Late Night Poets at the Midnight Show, where you get to take a walk on the wild side. If you're into the likes of Ginsberg, Bukowski, Fallon, Giddy, Kerouac, and Morrison, then you are on the right night. But please check out our other At the Midnight Shows. Join Jeremy Thursday morning with the Headliners Ball, and Break on Two Fridays with Pam, and join the Faze and Battle on Saturdays as they teach you the fine art of becoming part sinner, part saint. And then every other Sunday, join Robert M. as he brings you the solace of shadows. These shows are designed to come outside the lines with ritual emotions tinged with colloquial language, thereby pushing the envelope to expression and opening up new avenues of thought through pen and voice. So, pull up a chair, relax, and open your mind. I'm Rex, and my co-host Pam Ray, and I can't wait to get into and read your words. Hey, Pam.
Hey, Rex. Did you have what's that holiday? Oh, yeah, Halloween. Jeez, my brain just blanked out. Like, were there any, trick-or-treaters or costume balls that you attended?
No, not if you call scrubbing and corking a Halloween treat.
What is it? Did you say skunking and corking?
Scrubbing and corking.
Oh, well, that makes more sense than skunking and corking or whatever. I wasn't quite sure what that was, but it didn't sound too fun. No, I usually don't consider that were you wearing a French maid outfit? Because if you were wearing a French maid outfit, I might consider it a Halloween treat then.
No.
No, okay. Well, you know, a lady can dream. All right. Well, you know, I had a nice quiet day. No, of course, we don't get trick-or-treaters out here. Basically, I did a whole lot of reading poetry and binge-watching Criminal Minds. And so, you know, and of course, looking forward to hanging out with you, other cool poets and delving into the poetry. And I want to say thank you very much for letting us use your show to take care of the Halloween week carryovers and some other goodies. Oh, good times ahead. All right. Well, I'm going to go ahead and I'm going to bring a guest on. So here we go. Welcome, Fallon. Glad you could join us. How's it going?
Absolutely. I'm doing good. Just got in back from Olivia's house. She was I don't know what this thing was. It was an owl. It's a superhero owl. I saw it. I was like, okay, this is a new thing out. But she was so cute. And then my granddaughter, she was Cinderella. Cinderella.
Aww. But, I know you saw that picture of her earlier, and she just looked like Cinderella is a perfect choice for her with that blonde hair.
She's so cute. She's a mess. And we had a bunch of odd little trick-or-treaters. I've never seen stuff like this. We had two girls that were teenagers that were a peanut butter and jelly sandwich. One was peanut butter on one side and one was jelly on the other. I was like, okay. I ain't never seen that before. So, and then their sister was the Domino's pizza delivery person. So I was like, wow, okay.
Oh, that's awesome.
It was different.
Yeah, sometimes it's fun to see those costumes that are different, for sure.
But I'm going to try to hang out as long as I can, guys. I'm taking my medicine, so it won't be, too long, but I'm going to try to stay as long as I can.
Okay, well, no problem. Then what I'll do is I'll go ahead and I'll grab your right, and I will make sure to put that up so you have it read. And then as long as you can hang out with us is greatly appreciated. And
I bet Rex had his cat hanging out candy, didn't Rex?
Who's twerking?
You're twerking. Twerk it.
I'm not twerking. But
for candy, you will.
There once was a man named Perkins. who liked to jerkin and gherkin? His mother said, Perkins, don't jerkin, you're gherkin, you're gherkin, perkin, not jerkin. Try saying that one.
I cannot. You know, I can't even talk straight. All right. Here we go. It's called Who's Knocking by Phelan. Wooden words creak beneath the door as I sleep. Fear grinds its teeth, seeking dreams to bleed. A monster speaks, echoing, this isn't make-believe. Onyx is midnight's gem, setting evil's ring, worn gripping dim. Hell breathes harder as I fetch a glass of water, extinguishing flame, sipping an end for night terror games. End poem.
Great read, Bill. Thank you very much. And Pam, come on down.
Yeah, this poem impressed me quite a bit. It was actually originally for a contest that wasn't meant for a show, but we needed some extra rights for tonight. And it was a quote by M. Night Shyamalan. There's a monster outside my room. Can I have a glass of water? You know, first of all, I thought this had brilliant imagery and metaphors all the way through, powerful and emotive lines. And to me, it really spoke on the real-life monsters, the ones that bring those night terrors there as a child or even later in life. I particularly liked Fear Grinds Its Teeth, Seeking Dreams to Bleed, because it makes you think about the idea of how oftentimes when it comes to experiencing night terrors or nightmares, we oftentimes grind our teeth. And I thought this was a real emotive darkness. And I also really liked the extinguishing, hell breathes harder as I fetch a glass of water, extinguishing flames, sipping an end from night terror's game. So there's this idea of overcoming. There's this idea of victory, of extinguishing those flames that come with the nightmares and the fears that build up over time. So excellent write and very well done.
Thank you, Pam.
Nice. I could go with the thought of the night terrors, but I'm going to go with something a little different because you've got that little intonation in the middle. This isn't make-believe. That's your mind speaking to you in that little monster voice you keep hiding in the closet. But I like the way you open this. Wooden words creak beneath the door as I sleep. That intonation of the house is speaking to you, so to speak. Fear grinds its teeth, seeking dreams to bleed. I guess there's almost a Freddy Krueger notation in that. And the hell breathes harder. I get that the dream woke you up, whatever it was, because it kind of hits on that notion of, you shouldn't have watched that bloody movie, and you knew it, because it was going to give you heartburn and wake you up in the middle of the night. So the need for a glass of water to extinguish the flames is that bile rising in the back of your throat. And you're sitting there, shit, I shouldn't have gone that route. I knew better, but I did it anyway because I like them. But you
I hate them. I will not watch them for nothing. No, basically, when I was a little girl, I would always freak myself out when the lights would go out. And when I'd fall asleep, I would grind my teeth, and I'd wake myself up by grinding them. And I never really got it, went outside the door, so I just added this to it. But, you know, hell breathing a little harder is it knowing that I'm fixing to walk right past it because it thinks it's about to get a bite of me, and it doesn't. And I drink a little water and extinguish it. Like, you're done. You know, freshen up, regroup, cool off, and move on. So that's what that was, because I was terrified. I still am terrified of the dark. I hate to admit that, but I hate the dark. So, yeah, I'm a wimp.
I can relate
to
that. Yeah,
not considering the correction you do.
I'm a wimp. I know I can't. I'm like, turn the lights on. Turn the lights on. I can't stand it.
For me, it's so, not just the dark. It's also basements. I hate basements.
And silence. That, ooh, that's eerie to me. Dark and quiet? No way, Jose. Oh, no. But thank you, guys. I'm going to hang out for a little bit longer.
Cool.
All right, cool. All right, well, up next we have Massacre in the Garden of Poems by Mark Loopy. And Rex, go ahead and give that a read, please.
Massacre in the Garden of Poems by Mark Loopy. We were just playing in our paradise, two miserable, tattered refugees from love's wars. Non-love had finally won. I asked my poem girl for oblivion here in the green garden, near the usual fountain uplifting in the sky, with fall into a spreading pool. Our children poems pretended fright and danced and ran away, tumbling about in endless sunlit play. I hugged her behind walls where rose vines creep, if you want to, although I'd rather sleep, she said, and folded both her swan-like wings and carefully undid her dress's fastenings. A rainbow-colored flame swelled in her skin. To put it mildly, I wanted to begin. The flame went poof. I leaned. Oh, how I pressed my mouth against her mouth. Oh, how we kissed. Why do you think you are? Existence said. Toward soldiers, Frog marched in. We want you dead. Making another poem of love, the crime. There's let alone the fact, there's some in rhyme. 100 by our count, we have to act. They started slaughtering poems, they splashed and hacked. I cut my sonnet's throats, crushed V&Ls, and stomped the skulls of pitiful rondelles. Shredded, kicked round a trash of images, reported shreds, a pulsing mess. Then grabbed our kisses flame and burned the words. Just mine was slaughtered, hers escaped. As birds. That's all. Ooh. All right, Phil, what do you think?
Well, I got to get off mute first. we were just playing in our paradise, two miserable, tattered refugees. For me, it's just two people that started off maybe writing together when they were younger, and as they grew, you know, one as they grew older, one grew more sophisticated than the other one in their writing abilities. And the other one kind of not really got jealous, but maybe they did. I'm still trying to. That's a lot to really digest, and so I'm sorry if I didn't really pay attention too much. I'm sorry.
Thank you, Phil. Yeah. Damn.
It was an intriguing and thought-provoking write that some of the lines. There was a certain idea to me of the destruction of romance. The title made me think of the Midnight in the Garden of Good and Evil, that book and movie. I mean, not necessarily the poem was based on it, but just that's what popped into my head. But I don't know, they're just kind of this, to me, I get this idea, this vibe of just destruction and a loss of love. So creative, right, thought-provoking, and very well done.
Thank you, Pam. All right. We were just playing The Paradise, the Internet, Two Miserable Tattered Refugees. That one's easy. From Love's Wars, Non-Love had finally won. The existence between the two kind of hits on that note. They're sharing an existence where there is, but isn't, yet there might be a possibility, and it's a safer realm. Let's see what else. Our children poems pretended fright and danced and ran away, tumbling about in endless sunlit play. Kind of an illusion of going back in time before the pain kind of crept in and played itself across the skin and heart. The thought of the next one, moving too quickly. I hugged her behind walls with her. If you want to, although I'd rather sleep. And then the flame went poof. I leaned, oh, how I pressed my mouth against my own. I would kiss. Who do you think you are? Existence says. Then reality sets in. Yeah, should have left this one alone. The thought of a toy soldier's. Then the thought of the criminality in the thought and rhyme, slashing at the angle of possibilities. Only to ruin one's expectations, or maybe one shouldn't have had the expectation to begin with, because he's now down and out, burned, and she is just escaping, taking flight.
I like that. very really deep and thoughtful observations there, Rex. All right, and up next we have The Sky's Teardrops, Nursery Poem to Kids by Aleem Gamo. And this was from the Partner Parts Saint contest, Let Terror Be the Treat. And it goes like this. A boy kindled a single stick of match and threw it on the straw. The witness was his pooch. Then made the entire hayfield burning. The fire goes to fire. The forest withered as an evil witch. Then the village started to fed as it is attacked by arsons. The echo of the ecosystem seemed bothered, emaciated and frail, to held a knit air, becoming smothered, polluted with smokes of beings and trees, body blister. The sky was so keen for the moment, asphyxiated its lungs not to filter. It saw how the people and animals were suffering, hence dropped its tears to ease the apprehension of ever being. Its tears shaded the land for the boy blunders, so roared with its thunders, and made that reckless boy with fear to shudder. After an hour of yelling and sobbing for the pain it sensed, while gasping due to the fog of smog raised from arson, its tears became vanished and gone. The land had filled with floods, albeit some farmers lost their crops, and some deep bellies of the earth were becoming pools of teardrops. End poem.
Great read, Pam. Although this kind of walks on that note as a cautionary tale to children about the angle of be careful playing with fire, it kind of has a deep. It has a deeper thought within that. There's a hit on the ecosystem, the amount of asphyxiating crap that's in the air, burning lungs. So I'm going to hit on that thought of polluting this world as an overall back end, or burning the world alive, because hitting on the thought of crops being lost. So it kind of hits on the idea of too many idiots walking around with thoughts to that which they don't really, or maybe they do really wish to kindle, to let things run amok as a whole. All right, Pam. Mm-hmm. What do you think? No, Sal, I'm sorry.
That's okay. I was fixing to say a little bit of what you said. It's basically, even though it's metaphorically, he was saying that that you know, like the Smokey the Bear, you know, don't play with matches. But playing with fire with the ecosystem and the ozone, and basically because we talked about the fog and such, that, and then also us removing so many forests, you know, that we're removing, we will other plants will become asphyxiated without being able to basically live without the other greenery that's in that the chlorophyll, basically, is what they're saying. I know my medicine's kicking in, so I'm not sounding too intelligent at this moment. But yeah, this is, it's metaphorically speaking, and I think it has two entendres here. So great, right?
Thank you, Fallon. You're right. We do need the trees, because they take the oxygen and they take the carbon dioxide and they produce oxygen in their stead. So yes. We need the greenery. All right, Pam.
Yeah, this is definitely a dark right. And I like how you both see it on a metaphorical level, and it does definitely work that way. I think it also works well on a straightforward reality level in the idea of how horrific fire can be, and yet at the same time, there's this idea of renewal. I do like that it's a tale of warning. I did find it a little too dark to be a nursery poem, but but that's okay for what it is. You know, I don't know if I would necessarily have called it a nursery poem, but it does have an important message. You know, obviously being careful, playing with fire, both literally and metaphorically. I really liked the visceral imagery. Emaciated and frail to held and knit air, becoming smothered, polluted with smokes of beings and trees, body blister. Like, you can just picture the imagery of the trees and nature and the animals blistering, and it just, it's so horrific. And there's this reminder of what can happen when we're careless with what we shouldn't be playing with. It not only destroys us and people we love, but it destroys the earth, and it takes forever for it to grow back. So an excellent dark write and very well done.
Thank you, Pam. Well, that blister might be the nuclear act behind the moment.
Absolutely. That is very true. That is very true. I imagine, do trees blister? I mean, I know the sap bubbles. Huh. That is.
They do if I punch them. I'm being silly.
All right. Up next, we have Music of the Night by Gerald E. Green. And we have a recording for that one. So I will mosey on over there and push play.
Music of the Night, written and read by Gerald Green. Darkness sings, a brilliant tenor voice resounding in the night, beckoning with crafty lyrics, speaking of a garish light. Tempting notes of soft crescendo, softer than the thought of sleep, rhythms pulsing through his body, reaching into places deep. Listen, hear the phantom calling. Do you hear his plaintive voice? Christine, come and feel my music. Curse the day and then rejoice. Weep, Carlotta, you're rejected. Yesterday was yesterday. You were once a great soprano, now a tired matinee. Times have changed. This is a moment. Revel in this splendid sight. Come to me, I'm calling. Listen to the music of the night. End poem.
Great read, Joe. Thank you for the sound cut. It is very much appreciated. All right, Pam.
Yes, as always, he's got a wonderful, wonderful reading voice, a great performance. I thought this had nice rhyme and flow. It was a beautiful tribute, and this one was to the Phantom of the Opera contest that from Exploring Ekphrasis. What I like about this is a wonderful tribute to the characters. It's got great use of some musical terminologies such as tenor, crescendos, I really like how he speaks in the characters' voices. Listen, hear the phantom calling. Do you hear his plaintive voice? Christine, come and feel my music. Curse the day and then rejoice. Weep, Carlotta, you've been rejected. I like these lines because they remind us that it's not just the Phantom of the Opera isn't just a dark tale. It's a tale of love, of rejected, of jealousy, you know, and especially the idea of the jealousy between Christine and Carlotta as Christine takes her place. So wonderful write and very well done.
Thank you, Pam. And so, how about you?
I too enjoyed this piece, and I think it is a great rendition of the prompt. Tempting notes of resolve crescendo, softer than the thought of sleep. Rhythms pulsating through his body reaches to places deep. To me, that just basically says, because you know how it starts out. It's a nice subtle way, but at the same time, it's dark and it just creeps into your sleep, and the keynotes are just hitting those little moments in your sleep, and it's just like, you know, getting deeper and deeper and through the body. So for him to actually reach or be able to pin that, to get that to where that's where the thought I have in my head, that's a great penmanship. And this is just an excellent write by Gerald Green. And I too was surprised by his voice. He has a very nice reading voice. Wasn't expecting that. Great job.
Thank you, guys. This does give a nice note to backdrop to the Phantom himself, because you don't really get a whole lot except his movement on stage, what goes with it. This kind of the brilliant tenor voice resounding in the night. And that's over the second one, where the rhythm's pulsing through his body, reaching into places deep, gives a nice backing tone to the person himself. And then that offering those first two lines in the third stanza kind of hit the note of a narrator, and then you hit his voice, Christine, come and feel my music, curse the day, and then rejoice. Weep, Carlotta, you're rejected, yesterday was today, you were once a great soprano, now a tired matinee. It's almost a dark note of rejoicing in that thought of her being a tired matinee, dropping one for another, because the voice holds a little bit more of a pleasing tone in the moment. And then that final stanza, come to me, I'm calling, listen to the music of the night, and that is what I'll be. Nicely done, Joe. All right, Pam, back to you.
All right, up next we have Ambiance of Evil by S.V. Madison. And I'm taking a look here. Rex, will you give that a read for us, please?
Ambiance of Evil by S.V. Madison. Drink deep into the night. A blood-red moon smiles in its sinister delight. Sounds of footsteps echo down the hall. Then the sound of someone dragging chains, then lets them fall. Finally finding the courage to open the door, but an empty corridor is all my sight explores. The shadows of the trees dance on my floor in concert with the evening breeze. Ghostly music fills the air coming from the floor, then the walls, then everywhere. The same haunting tune, a symphony of gloom, satiates the room. I am numb as the fear within me leaves. I surrender to the nocturnal play. I am now apart. My emotions turn dark as a raven's wing, silent, somber feelings start. I open my window and embrace the ebony tide of darkness that arrives. It engulfs me and pulls me inside. I watch the shadows rise from the forest floor and reach my door. I do not fear them anymore. I understand now they are just travelers on a different path, not knowing how far or how long it will last. End poem. All right, Pam, what do you think?
Well, first of all, you did a wonderful read of that. I really like the word ambiance. I don't know, it's just one of my favorite words, the way that it flows. wonderful imagery throughout. I like the, but an empty corridor is all my sight explores. The shadows of the trees dance on my floor in concert with the evening breeze. Ghostly music fills the air. He really does create a dark ambiance in this, with the mention of the different sounds, the music, and even the dark corridor takes you into the idea of being lost in a dream. I also like how the emotional impact of this rite. I open my window and embrace the ebony tide of darkness that arrives, engulfs me and pulls me inside. I watch the shadows rise from the forest floor and reach my door. You know, there's this idea of both coming to that point of accepting the darkness as it embraces you. It's kind of got a psychological tear to it as it pulls you into that darkness that won't let go. Excellent write and very well done.
Thank you, Pam. And Belle, how about you?
Well, I was really taken in by just the first line in itself. Drink deep into the night. You know, one can say, oh, well, maybe he got drunk. No, he drank deep into the night. He actually let his realm of sleep fall deeper and deeper to where it should be when you're sleeping. And then, you know, the sinister moon come in and basically created the eclipse of shadows in his mind. Or maybe just, you know, sometimes when your eyes, you have rapid movement in your eyes when you're sleeping or think you're going to sleep. Sometimes you can see things that are not there. And I think that maybe this, you know, just the fears of the unknown when he's fallen asleep in that realm, he's caught in between that, like a purgatory in his own mind, not somebody's purgatory like here, but like in his own mind, his dreams and his thoughts are stuck in that moment. And it's the traveling thoughts that are stuck in his head, and that, you know, he's slave to what they're wanting to do for the night when he just wanted to just get some peace and he just can't. So that's what I gather from it, but way off, but this is a deep Sarissa Wright, and I liked it.
You got it. The veil of shadows between conscious and semi-conscious in the states, as you hit on. I like that. It's the scene set into play with a little bit of obvious things that are niggling at the back of his mind. The blood red moon smiles, sinister delight, sounds of echoes, sounds of footsteps echo down the hall and dragging chains, a little bit of imagination running away. Opens the door, just an empty corridor. Then the shadows of the trees offer up that note. Another little thing to play upon the imagination. The ghost of music is probably something ringing in the back of his head, but it seems to be coming from everywhere. A haunting tune, that note of the night whispering its flavored breeze, so to speak. And then other moments, I opened my window. I watched the shadows rise from the forest floor and reached my door. Then it comes to terms. Do not fear them anymore. They're just shadows. They're just the illusions of what my mind is conjuring. And not knowing how far, how long it will last, it kind of hits on that note of sleep and dream and where it goes from there. Thank you, SD. All right, Pam, we're back with you.
All right. Up next, we have Hannibal by Anton Ansford 37. And Felon, go ahead and give that a read for us, please.
Not a problem. And thank you for getting me a smaller one because I'm fading fast. Anton Ansford, 37, Hannibal. Shaved, I bear an uncanny resemblance to Anthony Hopkins, a fact not lost on an ex-girlfriend who called me Hannibal. After his character, the moral, ambiguous serial killer, The Silence of the Lambs. One October, I was seriously tempted to gate crash one of her famous parties disguised as the good Dr. Lecter. Fortunately, for all concerned, I passed at the opportunity. But at 4 a.m., I sometimes wonder if the physical resemblance was all she saw, end point.
Great read, pal. Thank you very much. All right, Pam.
I enjoyed this. There was a great brevity with dark humor to it. You know, I like the whole idea. Like, I like how he gives us a kind of a personal write on the idea that what dealing with an ex and, you know, how he looks and how his ex used to call him Hannibal because of his resemblance to Anthony Hopkins from The Silence of the Lambs. But I think what, you know, I mean, most of the lines to this were a great setup. And the real depth of the write comes, I think, to me in those end lines. But at 4 a.m., I sometimes wonder if the physical resemblance was all she saw. And because to me, those end lines speak on the idea, we wonder if besides what's on the surface, besides our physical looks, you know, what did somebody see about us beneath the surface? You know, did they see something that scared them away? Did they see something that they weren't attracted to? You know, there's this kind of idea of those self-doubts that hit you in the early hours of the morning after midnight. So just wonderful, right, and very well done.
I'm having the good doctor over for lunch. We'll be having some liver and fresh beans. With a bit of Chianti. All right, Phil.
I've got something totally different. You know, her being his ex-girlfriend, he was going to crash her party. He's like, nah, I'm not going to do that. But he does crash her at 4 o'clock in the morning. And the resemblance he's talking about, he's going to kill her. He's going to kill her ass in the middle of the night. He ain't going to crash her party. He's crashing her. So to me, he's like, I wonder if it's all the physical resemblance that she recalls. No, because I think he's taking her out. That's what I get from it. It's not just the fact that he looks like him, but he's acting like him. So this is a great poem, very dark, and it can just has your mind wandering. But I want to add something. When I was pregnant with my first son, let me tell you, the gentleman that was doing my sonogram, or I had to get to a special doctor because I was high risk, let me tell you what, he looked just like Anthony Hopkins, and it was around the same time that crap came out, and he had the light off. I was like, I told Mama, I said, Mama, can we turn the light on? Can we turn the light on? And he goes, no, ma'am. I said, did anybody ever tell you? He goes, five of beans? I was like, okay, I got to go. I got to get out of here. That was it. That was it. I was up and down. He was laughing. He goes, no, I'm sorry. Please come back. I was like, no, I'm done. It's over. I said, I won't go back to him. I think his name was Dr. Molinex. I was like, I'll never go back to that man again. So I didn't get the results. I wouldn't go back. But, yeah, that's what this brings up to me. But, yeah.
Wow. That's pretty funny. Not to mention probably pretty horrifying in the moment.
Yes, but I was only 21, and I was like, I'm scared of my own shadow. So that was not – I didn't like that.
Oh, my God. Wow. All right, Pam, what we got next?
All right. Up next, we have Circus of Fears by Fran Marie. And it goes like this. Welcome to the Circus of Fear. Come spin the wheel of destiny. Hurry, hurry, step right up. Take the dead clown ticket for a chance of change to see. Round and round it goes. Do you feel lucky today? You don't stand a chance because it's the way we dead clowns play. Chuck a la chuck a lie. Sticks a needle in your eye. Don't break the oath or else you die. Once in our ghoulish domain, dared you enter, you have vowed to play true. No turning back, no matter what grotesque things we clowns may put you through. Step into our freakazoid machine for a makeover delight. Our metal claw will carve you a monstrous face of fright. Venture through the house of mirrors. See your new reflection. If you come out, we'll reward you with a cyanide confection. Yum, yum, twiddle dum. Drink some fresh blood lemonade. We'll skin you alive to make a juicy red lampshade. Frankenstein, our friendly fiend ride, will put the screws to you. He'll wound you up like Jack in the Box and stuff you in there too. The puppet master pulls your strings. He's such a playful ghoul. His painted face rides in porcelain white while stiffen you up tight with glue. Another ghastly clown treat, sure to please and squeeze the life right from your soul. Try our carousel of long-lost dreams. It's a horror-hissing snake pit bull. And poem.
Great read, Pam. Thank you very much. And Phil, what do you think about this?
Wow, this is a very, very dark ride, and it's got a lot of this has nursery rhyme too, some of it, the way that some of the things that they use, some of the actual terminology. Or the verbiage in it. What really stood out, it says, once in your ghoulish domain, dared you entered, you have vowed to play true. not turning or no turning back, no matter what grotesque things we clowns may put you through. And it is that thing, because a lot of people are scared of clowns. I mean, look at John Wayne Gacy. Is that not enough to scare you? I don't know what else is. I mean, I think he put the little freakish into the clowns. But and then it says step into our freakazoid machine. I guess I don't. Only thing I can think of is that it's that it's just like these, how things jump at you. You know, those little clown houses or whatever. That's what that reminds me of, and then the mirrors and stuff. So this is a very dark ride, and I like the way the cadence in it is pretty spot on. Enjoyed it a great deal.
Nice. Thank you, pal. I like the Connie Barker opening up. Welcome to the Circus of Fear. Come spin the wheel of destiny. Hurry, hurry, step right up. Take the dead clown ticket for a chance of change to see. Round and round it goes. Do you feel lucky today? You don't stand a chance, because it's the way we dead clown play. Nice. And you hit that note with the nursery rhyme, that chuck-a-luck-a-lie sticks a needle in your eye. Don't break the oath or else you die. Nice touch with that. And there was another one. Yum, yum, twiddle dum, drink some flesh blood, lemonade. We'll skin you alive to make a juicy red lampshade. Little place of, humor in this too. But it does kind of bite at the, what you said, how people fear clowns and what they get into. The freakazoid machine, make over the light. Ooh. And that metal claw, you remember that, put your money in and grab a toy, see what comes out. But you never get anything. The adventure of the house of mirrors. And the venture of the house of mirrors, see a new reflection. If you come out, we'll reward you with a cyanide infection. Yeah, either way, you're dying afterwards. So nice touch there, friend. I like this. Pam, what about you?
Yeah, this one was a lot of the rights from last show with the Circus of the Damned. Just really dark, visceral imagery, like a lot of top-notch rights. I too really liked the wordplay in this that had that, like you said, the nursery rhyme feel. Chuck a lie. And that also makes me think of like the idea of ground chuck, and just very like gives you the creeps. I also liked yum yum twiddle dum, drink some fresh blood lemonade, we'll skin you alive to make a juicy red lamb shade. That makes me think of that doctor that you know, World War II, the Nazi camps, where they would use that one particular Nazi that would make lampshades out of people's skin. And then that's where it got people. Yes, that's it.
Don't forget the ladies' gloves. He did that too. And seat covering.
Yes. Yes, exactly. Yeah, it was. Man, horrific stuff. I also like the play on words with the end with snake pit bowl, with bowl being spelled B-O-W-L, so it's like a pit shaped like a bowl filled with snakes, but it also makes you think of like pit bull dogs. So I think that's really clever there. And just a wonderful, creepy look at the ghoulish clowns that come into this rite. So excellent rite and very well done.
They're creepy and they're kooky, mysterious and kooky. They're all
talking about my family.
The family. The house is a museum where people come to see them. They really are a scream. The Addams Family. All right, where are we going?
All right, up next we have One Way Ticket by Lizzie F. And Rex, go ahead and give that a read, please.
All right, One Way Ticket by Lizzie F. Through the funhouse, you must beware. Connie's warned, enter if you dare. Too late now, you've made your purchase. To experience, the circus. You've heard that in this scanty shack live evil things that will attack. You know that it is just for laughs. Fake phantoms chase you through its paths, ushered towards hell, hell's playground door, anticipating what's in store. Walking along the mirrored hall, each image shows what will befall. Reflections of your bloodstained face, wearing clothes of funeral lace. Behind you, shadows of unknown. You turn, but standing quite alone. The shrieking of a beheaded talk, while headless corpses join your walk. Ghostly girls trailing long white gowns, unfunny chased by creepy clowns. You make it past around the bend, where two doors stand marking the end. Your mouth hangs open in a gape. Must pick the one for your escape. Behind you booms a gruesome voice. You quickly choose and make your choice. The price you paid was forever, because sometimes dead is better. And boom. All right, Pam.
Great read there, Rex. I really liked how this created that whole buildup of intensity and the idea of a chase. I like that she opens up with, through the funhouse, you must beware, carnies warn, enter if you dare. And of course, you know, the tone, because, you know, of course, if it says enter if you dare, you're going to enter. There's a wonderful sense of movement and noise in this to create the atmosphere. The shrieking of beheaded talk while headless corpses join your walk. Ghostly girls trailing long white gowns. Unfunny chase by creepy clowns. Wonderful rhyme and alliteration. And I really like that she ends on the line, the price you paid was forever, because sometimes dead is better. I just, this is one of those endings that just makes you want to do like a dark, creepy laugh, because it's that wonderful idea that there are some things the worse than death, some fates worse than death. And so excellent write and very well done.
Thank you, Pam. All right, Phil, how are you doing with this one?
Oh, I like this one a lot. It reminds me of my childhood, for one, because my grandmother lived in Pomona, California, and we'd go out there and see her every year, and she'd always take us to Disneyland, and I don't know why this woman, I don't know why she did it, but I think she tormented me. We go through the Wax Museum, and to get to the Wax Museum, it's a haunted house. And I mean, it ain't just a haunted house. I mean, the worst haunts that you'll ever see in your life, because you're where they make everything, you know what I mean? You're at, the, you know, where they do all the little scary stuff. Anyway, I ain't gonna lie, I made them shut that thing down. I was 8 years old. It shut it down. They had to turn the lights on to get me out. I lost my mind in that thing. I was like, I can't take no more. I'm loose. I was just like peeling my skin. I was so terrified. But that's what this brought to me, is because it you know, death would have been better for me that day, because I think I pooped and peed my pants 15 times. I was like, I cannot do this. I was like, finally, when I was clawing at my grandmother, I think I clawed her back and punched one of the people. So, yeah, I don't think she took me back after that. But before that, she took me every year when I wasn't big enough to do nothing. And as I got a little bigger, I was able to take her down. So. But, yeah, that's what this reminds me of. I'd rather have been dead that day than I had to go back through that thing. I promise you. That was, even today I will not do it. No way.
Damn.
No way.
Thank you, Phil. Well, I got to say, the one-way ticket punched its own voice to where this is going. Enter if you dare. Well, you don't have a choice at that point, because you've purchased that one-way ticket by your actions while alive. So the thought of dead is better. At least you're not experiencing this realm as a living entity, which probably drives someone off the edges of their mind, so to speak. And she does hit on hell. Where was that? Damn, now I can't see it. Well, she does mention the thought of hell, so the back end, I say, you're paying for the deeds you've done on Earth. Now you have to relive this kind of carny angle circus motif every day of your life. And like this notion says, you're better off dead experiencing than this going through it as a living entity, because, yeah, this definitely wouldn't be a fun house for you. All right, Pam. Ouch.
Up next, we have Fear by Zico and Felon. Would you give that a read for us, please?
Absolutely. Let me refresh on that here. Hold up. Let's see. All right, here we go. And this is by Zico, and it's called Fear. A skeletal beast, weak yet unresistible, makes me weak and unstable. Its unplanned and unpredictable presence weakens and makes anything unreliable. Existence, everywhere but not seen, failed at approach and crawls under the skin, mixes and mingles, wrecks and wrinkles, time, space, reasoning, and sense, all lost value and effects in its presence. Created from the realm of thoughts, forged deep in the darkest bowls of hell, and it materializes followed by confusion and uncertainty. Being fearless is not spoken by the voice, but just like being heartless. It's shown by those who have the choice. Can be overcome, but cannot be defeated. It lives on. It still exists. Not your choice to submit or resist. Light and bright, focus and assist to clear away the black mist in porn.
Great read there, Phil. Thank you very much. And Pam, what do you got?
Yeah, great read there, Felon. I like, on the technical level, I like the little tidbits of alliteration throughout and the imagery. I thought this was a really thought-provoking write that could be taking, you know, literally about a monster, but how I kind of thought was the idea of the monster of time and the monster of aging, especially with mentions of, you know, felt at approach and crawls under the skin, mixes and mingles, wrecks and wrinkles, and then the mention of the, where was that? And it materialized followed by confusion and uncertainty. Like, it really felt to me like the whole idea of the monster of time that claims the body and claims the mind and causes the confusion of, like, Alzheimer's or dementia. I thought it had just wonderful thought-provoking imagery, you know, and especially in the lines of, you know, exists everywhere but not seen, felt at approach and crawled under the skin. Just, you know, great lines, wonderful, almost like a psychological darkness, and very well done.
Well, thank you, Pam. I'm going to go a little bit obvious. The title, Fear. It's what fear does to the body itself, the mind, and especially when you get down the back end of this, can it be overcome, but can be overcome, but cannot be defeated. It lives on and still exists. That kind of hits me with the thought of phobia in the moment, because you can't overcome fear on the basis of what fear is, but phobias, they linger. Even if you push them to the side, they linger deeply. They get under your skin. They that wrinkle thought, mingles, wrecks, and wrinkles, that's the idea of that niggling need that crunches beneath the skin and into the mind, and it keeps you forever on your pins and needles, so to speak. It's always biting at you, like the cockroaches that crawl across your skin as you sleep.
Yuck.
Fel, you got to read it. How about you?
I think it's the fear of death in itself. You can't escape it because it's going. You can overcome of dying, but I think if you see here, the skeletal beast, weak and yet unresistible. I think it's our makeup of who we are, you know, and exists where it's not being seen. I mean, it exists. You know you're going to die, but you can't see that you're going to die. And then as life approaches, you know, the mixes and the mingles and the wrecks and the wrinkles and then the time, the space, and the reason and the sense, it all loses value and effect in its presence. Because guess what? All that's going down, is all going down once you're dying. You know, when you're dying, it's the fear. I mean, that's what I got from the fear of dying. And then the fact that you are dying. So that's what I got from it. Great write, though. Great alliteration.
Excellent. Thank you, Phil. All right, Pam, we're about to come to you.
All right. Well, hold on. Let me, I gotta put up a picture in Late Night Poets in hope of scaring Pee-wee, and then I'll grab the next poem. So, you know.
Don't put my picture up there and try to scare nobody, Pam.
Dang it, it didn't work. Oh, well. Guess he's lucky tonight. I don't get to scare him. So I'll try again later. In the meantime, I'll go ahead and go grab that next poem. All right.
This will be my last one, guys. I'm about to fade out.
Okay. All right, then. Let's see what we got here. Up next, we have The Big Top in God's Firmament by Rose Winter 515. And it goes like this. Crowns on striped tent herald the magpie circus. Flags, red cross on white. St. George, patron of England, dragon whisperer, blessed by God. Flew evil, end of the pier show, for your delight and delectation, the Big Top has come to town. On All Hallows Eve, the night before All Saints Day, we pray to God for our family, past, present, and future. Amen.
Great read, Pam. Thank you very much. And Phil, why don't we start with you?
I have no idea on this one. I'm going to be honest. I think my medicine's kicked in, so I'm sorry. I'm just like, no. I really don't know where this one's going other than praying for those in your family the day before the Halloween because it's supposed to be a day of evil or haunts or whatever it is. It's supposed to be either your soul's not taken, blah, blah, blah. So, yeah, that's what I got from it. I'm sorry. I apologize. That's awesome. Yeah.
Well, the back end, All Hallows Eve, is the it's supposed to be that one night of the year that opens up the vein between the living realm and the realm beyond the veil of shadows, so to speak, because the following day is All Saints Day, which is a very holy day. So it's supposed to be the one day of the year that that which is evil and malicious can cross over and have a little bit of fun on this side of things. But I did like the thought offered up that a nice old type of cross, so to speak. Even got a look down at the bottom; it's got the nice edges, kind of with that what do they call them? Now I can't think of it. Something from the dark end, not dark end. Gothic. It's got a gothic touch to the back end of this in the way it's shaped. Pam, what do you think?
Well, you know, I like that, you know, as always, you know, Rose Winter has her, you know, short, impactful lines. It was a great brevity, but, you know, longer than she usually does. And I like that she pays tribute to the All Hallows Eve and the All Saints Day. You know, for many religions like Catholics, they that's what they tend to pay attention to rather than the idea of Halloween itself. I also like that she delved into history with this. St. George, patron of England, dragon whisperer, blessed by God, slew evil. Now, there's this, it's almost like a tribute to the saints of the past. And as you mentioned, it's that idea where in that one night where that the veil is thinner and you can kind of communicate with family and friends and saints, you know, that have existed in the past. And so just really thoughtful write and very well done.
And it looks like a key as well. And I'm wondering if you, yeah, it looks like a key. I'm wondering if the end of the Piers show was a reference to Piers Morgan.
It could be, yeah. You know what else it kind of looks like? Because I didn't think it kind of looks like a sword, like that a knight would carry. I see it.
Hey, okay.
I see.
All right. Where are we going next?
All right. Up next, we have Circus Affairs by Poetic Creations. And go ahead, Rex, and give it a read for us, please.
Circus Affairs by Poetic Creations. Head to foot, got a black eye, was caged by that big burly guy. Gargantuan was his rage. Hypnotized by sword swallowers, fire breathers, what was a few dollars? People like me, captivating, doing captivating things, but I live in captivity. Elephants rise, acrobatics up high. At the big top, trapezing is flying. Jonesing for a good time, enter if you dare. Screams and scares, a double dog dare. We don't judge, we'll treat you fair. Overdressed or barely there. Throw your hands up, wake a silent night. Going back to normal just doesn't feel right. And Paul. All right, what you got?
Well, first of all, great read there. I liked the flow and the imagery in this one. I like the title Circus Affairs. It kind of makes you think of the whole idea of how in circuses and, you know, like people are often close, and it makes you think of the idea of like, I don't know, like the title and the whole write kind of give me the idea of somebody having affairs with the wrong women in the circus or the wrong people in the circus, like the strong man's wife or the sword swallower. You know, I like the head to foot got a black eye, was caged by that big burly guy, gargantuan was his rage. Yeah, all the way through there's this really great imagery. People like me captivating, doing captivating things, but I live in captivity. I like how he plays with words and he plays with imagery. And there's this idea of putting, like, it's almost like an extended metaphor for putting on a show for other people, always doing things for the amusement of other people, like jonesing for a good time, enter if you dare, screams and scares, a double dog dare. I like that because it makes me think of, it makes me think of the movie A Christmas Story where they double dog dare him to lick the frozen pole. And it's that idea of always doing what makes other people happy until you find yourself just trapped in that cage and never truly able to be yourself. So excellent write and very well done.
Thank you, Dan. It's all about the sideshow, the circus freaks and the sideshow oddities. Yeah, that first stanza does hit on the notion. Yeah, I tripped where I shouldn't have tripped, but they often have the sides, the sword swallowers, the fire breathers, and then people like me captivating, doing captivating things, but I live in captivity. There's the idea that they're only made for this freak show and sideshow oddity because there's no other realm for them. And then the last three hit on that angle of the people come there jonesing for a good time. The laughs, the screams, the shakes, the beards, getting to look at the bearded lady or the tattooed woman or watching the knife throwers. So it does hit on that idea of getting into something you wouldn't normally get into, but thoroughly enjoying it in the moment. And then at the back end of things, you go home and, hey, the real world just doesn't seem to match up.
Absolutely. All right. Well, I'm actually going to have you read two in a row. Up next, we have Ballad of Old Grandpappy Jess and the Devil by Pee Wee Cousin. And go ahead and give that a read, Rex.
Ballad of Old Grandpappy Jess and the Devil by Pee Wee Cousin. Seems to be, must have been back around 33. He'd tell the devil had made his way down to Tennessee. I don't believe, but I heard it all straight from my pa. And he was an honest man, served the Lord and then more. Took me aside one day and said to me, boy, devil's real in here. This is here, shotgun ain't no toy. Grandpa Jess one night walking home from the barn came across his bag and was spinning this here yarn. Now, mind you, it was nearly round about Halloween. The people in them parts, they tended to get a mite mean. Anywho, Jess took and carried that bag all the way home. As he got home, he got to feeling like he weren't alone. Hey, B, come out here. Give this bag a look, he cried. B staggered out, looked in the bag, fell over, and died. Right there on that very spot, Daddy said, hand of God, Grandpappy, 'twant the brightest, in fact, a dumb old clock. But even he, being a law-abiding Christian, down on a knee, said goodbye to B, set out on a mission, got a shotgun, and the folks from Hill and Holler, too. I know we've had our problems before, but devil's owed his due. Bastard took my wife, and I intend to collect his life. 17 men set out that day for the devil they did strive. Only one returned, and rest of days he twerk never right, and nobody knows for sure but my memory of his hindsight. Goes well. The devil's up and down in Tennessee. 16 families these men will never again see. From Holler and Hill and somewhere else altogether, they set out with bad intent and ran into shitty weather. Trapped out in the snow and cold, fearing of retribution, devil started whispering ears, gave him the solution. When the campsite was found, round about time for taxes, revenue a man found in 16 backs, pentagrams, and axes. And bones.
Great read there, Rex. An awesome story right by Pee Wee. I like how this makes me think of the song The Devil Went Down to Georgia. That was really cool. I really enjoy a good first-person narrative. I like the second stanza with the advice given from the father. Took me aside one day and said to me, boy, devil's real, and here's this here shotgun, ain't no toy. Grandpa just one night walking home from the barn came across his bag and was spinning this here yarn. The different characters brought in, like, hey, B, come out here. Give this bag a look, he cried. B staggered out, looked in the bag, fell over, and died. It's wonderful, dark humor within these lines and the idea of advice passed on from one generation to the next, and how it kind of makes me think of the idea of how stories kind of turn and grow as they go through each generation. I got a chuckle out of those lines. From Holler and Hill, somewhere else altogether, they set out with bad intent and ran into shitty weather. You know, I think when you get like certain people together and they're drinking, and you just know they're going to set out with bad intent. So just a really clever write. Wonderful dark humor and very well done.
Well, it's on the idea of Tennessee, and there is this kind of walks on the note of Appalachian tales, but I'm. Because he hit the Ballad of an Old Grandpappy Jess and the Devil, there is a note here. There was a long feud and war between Tennessee and Kentucky, some families that got must have gone back about 100 years. And one of the guys, head of the families, was his name was Devil Ants. And this kind of walks in that tone because they did do a lot of killing. The law, they had their own type of law. And they were Christian, Christian fair people. But they all, hey, we don't turn the other cheek. We take care of business. And there was a lot of killing between them. This kind of hits me up with that thought of going after this guy, Devil Ants, and playing on that notion of, yeah, a lot of people didn't come back going for that guy. It was just the way they ran.
Absolutely, absolutely. There is actually this one family from the Himalayan, that area, that actually had blue skin for generations.
I think that's got to do with something. Was it silver nitrate?
It was a genetic disorder.
Huh?
Oh, it was a genetic. It was something genetic that they passed along.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. I'll have to find an article about them and send you the link. But it was really interesting because they just kept passing along this genetic. Great comment there, Rex.
All right. What are we doing now?
All right. Well, now we are going. We are done with our carryovers. We are moving on to some extra rites. So the rites we're going to do now. We got a few from a contest that I ran, and the prompt was Disney's Silly Symphonies, The Skeleton Dance. You remember that black and white cartoon, Rex?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I decided to see what people could do with that. And it is a brevity contest, so they're all fairly short. All right, and this is Full Moon Effect by Doc Frank. And it goes like this. Goblins, black cats, and skeletons rule the Halloween night. Then the crazies take over the show. Attempt failed at fright. But the real snake scared all below. The brave tried to be calm with all their might. Night ended when in the sky there appeared a strange glow. End poem.
Great read, Pam. Thank you very much. Let's see. Well, it kind of hits on the double angle of Halloween. You got the play angle, the goblin, cat, skeletons rule of Halloween night. Then the crazies take over the show, attempt failed at fright. But the real snakes scared all below. The real snakes, what lies below? Hell? The brave tried to be calm. Yeah. And the strange glow at the end of the evening. Yeah. Well, you've either met your makers and you're all now playing patty cakes with the demons that came for you, or... The world blew up in the moment. What you got?
Yeah, I thought this was a nicely written brevity. I enjoyed the imagery in it and the rhyme. what I liked about this one is there's this, as you mentioned, a duality to it. It's the pretend of Halloween, but it's also... The real scary things that exist. For one, I think, you know, people in general are just more scary than any costume or you know, monster that you can make up. And I think that comes through with then the crazies take over the show, attempt failed at fright, but the real snake scared all below. I like that idea of the crazies to me being those it's the Halloween pranks that go overboard. I remember one year we had a stupid-ass teenager just, like, practically jump in front of our car. Thankfully, we didn't hit them. But it was still, like, the most stupidest thing I've ever seen in my life. And another year, a teenager just jumped out and tried to scare us, and he got yelled at. He would have got punched if he didn't run so fast, but yeah, it's to me that idea of the back and forth, the balance between what we pretend to be scared of and what we actually should be scared of. And we should really be scared of some people's stupidity, in my opinion. So excellent write and very well done.
All right. Do 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 do.
I can only yes, I can actually. I've done that before. I have unfortunately had to try to open a can without a can opener. All right. Up next we have Skullduggery by Dammit Dave. And Rex, go ahead and give that a read for us, please.
Skullduggery by Dammit Dave. The skeletons arose from their graves. Skullduggery's afoot. The music stirred these undead knaves. They just could not stay put. The guard turned on his radio and walked among the stones. How could this rookie ever know he'd meet with dancing bones? He watched them shake their hips and jaws. His feet both turned to lead. He should have known they danced because he's played the Grateful Dead. Edful. Wasn't expecting that last line there, Dave. That was a nice touch. So, yeah, I got to hand that one to you. Well, that was funny.
Oh, man. I really liked this one. I had to give this one the gold in the contest. Not only great rhyme and flow and imagery, but wonderful humor and wordplay. It smiled. It cracked me up all the way through. That ending with playing the Grateful Dead, he should have known they danced because he played the Grateful Dead, was awesome. And I like the use of the word skullduggery. And I really liked that second sentence. The guard turned on his radio and walked among the stones. How could this rookie ever know he'd meet with dancing bones? Wonderful lines and definitely very well done.
Where are we going next?
Oh, did you want to comment on it?
I did.
You did? Oh, I thought that was just like a short little like starter comment. Sorry.
Oh, no. There's not a really deeper note of that. Otherwise, but that was a fun piece to go with the skeletons itself. And that end notes was the funny angle. When you're listening to the Grateful Dead, you got some company coming. Because they're going to be grateful.
Absolutely. Absolutely. All right. And next we have Give It All You Got by Sapphire 4. And it goes like this. Shoulders up to ears, arms dangling down. Bend the knees, sway at hips, turn around. You skeletons are a bit too stiff. Lumber up, realistic costumes, fluorescent bones gulp. Empty eye sockets scaring me, want to flee. Stop right there. Why walking towards me? Choreography over chaps. Arg, leaks goo. On second thought, don't call me, I'll call you. End poem.
Let me read, Pam. My thought was she offered up Silly Symphonies. Was that part of the contest? Silly Symphonies?
That was yeah, that the contest I ran, the only prompt I had was the video of the silly symphony. It's the skeleton dance.
It walks along that very same note as Merry Melodies, a little cartoon motif, silly symphony. Well, anyway, I got to go with the back end of this. Choreography, overchaps, Lee Skoo, on second thoughts, don't call me, I'll call you. Kind of hits on the notion of this guy hasn't fully fleshed off his skin yet. He's not one of the bone crew. In fact, he's got a little bit too much crap on him, and he's still leaking. Come back when you're a fully flayed set of bones.
Absolutely. Absolutely, yeah. I did enjoy this one, too. And, yeah, that ending really makes you crack a smile. Wonderful humor with the – and I love that this whole rite fits – you know, this rite fits with the silly symphony skeleton dance video. I like that she brings us into the skeleton dance practice with the choreography. This actually kind of it made me think of when back in the 1980s when jazzercise was really popular. Like I just have this image of in my head of these skeletons in their jazzercise outfits, leotards, and you know.
Sweating to the oldies. What was his name?
Oh my goodness,
Richard
Simmons.
Richard
Oh my gosh, totally. Yeah, skeletons doing Richard Simmons. Oh my gosh. Yeah, I like that end part too. And I also like, you skeletons are a bit too stiff. Lumber up. I thought that was really great playing with the words and the imagery. So very cool and very well done.
Let's actually, see. I thought lumber might have been a miscalculation because I sits right next to you, so I was thinking it's probably more like limber up.
Oh.
Because she mentioned you guys are a bit too stiff.
Oh, you know what?
Limber.
Yeah, I think it was supposed to be limber up. Well, you know, unfortunately, sometimes autocorrect. You know, does that kind of stuff. But yeah, I bet you're right. You skeletons are a bit too stiff. Limber up. Yeah, good stuff though. All right, so we are actually going on to the next contest, which was the one that you know, Felon had written to, which was the quote, there's a monster outside my room. Can I have a glass of water? And again, this is a brevity contest. And let me grab the first rite. So, do. All right, here we go. And all right. Do. All right. We have Come Up Here, My Pretty by Pink Fairy 5. And Rex, go ahead and give that a read, please.
Come Up Here, My Pretty by Pink Fairy 5. Come up here, my pretty, and you will see. The monster will not be the death of thee. I need some water, and I need it now. Come here, my pretty. I will tell you how. Do not be afraid. The monster eats you up quick. I need that water. This is not a trick. Bring it to me, you minion, you pawn, you sacrifice. I need that water, not once, but twice. And pawn. Well.
Great. Yeah, the great read there. You know, I really like how to me, this was not just a monster rite, but it was a rite on mind control and the idea of how monsters, you know, those real-life monsters will call lemmings over the cliff, especially with lines like, come here, my pretty, I will tell you how. And the mention of the word, use of the word minions, bring it to me, you minion, you pawn, you sacrifice. I need that water, not once, but twice. So excellent dark rite and very well done.
It could be, actually. It might be the thought of just the imposition of bring it quickly, bring it now, do as I say. And you might live not to be eaten this day. So it's the invocation of the threat itself that walks, that is supposed to work and walk its way along this. The minion pawn that sacrificed is just another bite at that candle of, hey, if you don't do it properly the first time, you ain't going to be around for a second one.
Very true. I just had another thought as you were commenting, and I liked what you had to say, but I was just thinking maybe this monster is actually a little kid thinking they're the boss of their mom or dad, you know, because plenty of little kids have that attitude, especially nowadays, that they're in charge of mom and dad.
Maybe it's just the bit and angle of, hey, Dom and sub.
That could be. I like that idea. I like that. Very cool. It's always fun when, poetry gives you different angles that you can think about, especially when it's a brevity. So, very cool. All right. And I'll go ahead and grab the next poem. And we have Some Monsters Are Real by Seagull, and it goes like this. There's a room in my house for poets only. Yellow scraps of scribbled verse decorate the walls, discard syllables and excess adjectives litter the floor. A dangling participle chandelier lights a desk of solid metaphor. Drawers bulge with iams, troges, and anapests. Symbolic vases hold colorful bouquets of poetic devices. Ballads breeze through an open window, ruffling curtains of meter. The door, jealously guarded by a demonic muse, delighting in denying entry to thirsty poets. End poem.
Great thing. And I like the play in this one. It invites that last part, the door jealously guarded by my demonic muse, delighting and denying entry to thirsty poets. Invites that notion of it'll be ready when it's ready, not before. You don't get to take a peek before then and bugger off. The idea of, you know what, you're really that interested, you're going to have to wait until it's posted, not beforehand. That's the one door, no one, the one room with the one door that nobody gets entry to. What about you?
Well, I have to say that I agree with you. I really like this. One of the things I often tell people in my contest is, you know, that they don't have to take a prompt literally, that they can think outside the box. And I gave Seagull the bronze because I really felt like she did do that. She did think outside of the box with the idea of the monster of the muse that doesn't always cooperate. Yeah, I thought this was, it was brilliant. It was clever. It had wonderful imagery and metaphors. And like you, I thought it was an excellent write on the idea of how the poetic muse oftentimes guards those thoughts that leads to a right and isn't going to let you by. I like that she played with the different words, you know, discard syllables and excess adjectives, litter the floor. I like the excess adjectives, like all those words that, you know, that you want to write down, but the muse tells you, no, they're not needed right now. I did really like that ending, the door jealously guarded by a demonic muse, delighting in denying entry to thirsty poets. You know, what we crave in the moment is not always what we can have. So, excellent write and very well done. All right. And next, we have... There's a monster outside my room. Can I have a glass of water? By Scripto. And go ahead, Rex, and give that a read.
There's a monster outside my room. Can I have a glass of water? By Scripto. A year had passed since Harry's adoption, and he was hoping against hope that this time it would be different. He was still wetting his bed regularly, often blaming the frequent storms which slapped the overhanging tree branches against his bedroom window, but not always. Hearing footsteps approaching his room in the dead of night, Harry reached under the bed, gently tapping the chest of the creature which lay there and whispered his plaintive request. End poem.
Great read, Rex. I really like how this one took a different turn at the end. There was that sense of reality to it because there are a lot of kids that are in the foster care system that deal with a lot of, you know, physical, psychological, and emotional abuse, and even just getting passed from home to home. You know, they oftentimes don't know how to react, and you know, I like that. He told this story, this almost too true to life story of this kid within a brevity, and the twist at the end where it turns out that the monster under the bed, the footsteps in the hallway are what you need to be worried about, and the monster under the bed is the provider and the protector, the one that's always there for him. So excellent write and very well done.
Well, I guess that covers the whole thing since there's nothing left that I can offer. Thank you very much.
Oh, I'm sure you can think of something.
You covered everything I was going to hit on. This is a true story. It bites at that notion.
It's sad. It's unfortunately a sad truth. So, yeah. But I have to say this contest, I got some like really just top notch entries. You know, I like when I have time. I mean, I love running contests for shows, but I also really enjoy when I have time to run contests just for the fun of it. So, you know. All right. And up next, we have No Ordinary Monster, Blue Raven. And it goes like this. I know my monsters, and this silhouette was unmistakable. The bristly broom and pointed hat were cliche, not to mention the cat. Maybe she had the wrong address for a coven, but my inner Dorothy was aroused. Get me some water, I whispered to my owl. I'd like those red shoes for myself. End poem.
Great read, man. That third stanza, maybe she had the wrong address for a coven, but my inner Dorothy was aroused. That might have been the right, wrong word at the moment. Get me some water, I whisper to my house. I like those red shoes myself. But it's going to be a little trading, are we? It does kind of play out something a little odd. But the thought with the bristly broom, the hat, the cliched hat, not to mention the cat, obviousness, but there's something that's lurking deeper within this. And is that the monster she thinks this is of, or is it the monster that she becomes because she wants those shoes?
You know what? I think you made it, and actually that's what I kind of saw in it, because when you said, you know, that there's something deeper in there, like, is it the monster that she's become because she wants those shoes? I really felt like she used the Wizard of Oz, the Dorothy, and the witch of the, well, whichever direction she's from, the Wicked Witch of the East or West, I can't remember. But anyway, I really felt like that this was a great take on a classic. And to me, it really spoke on the monsters of greed and envy, which is why that last line works so well. Get me some water, I whispered to my owl. I'd like those red shoes for myself. We always think the grass is greener on the other side, you know. And I really like how she took a different approach to an already well-known tale to show that there's Dorothy wasn't all good. Gwendolyn the Good Witch wasn't all good. There, in every part of us, and every one of us has that wicked witch and that good witch, and that desire to have what other people have. So, excellent write and very well done.
All right, where to next?
All right. Up next, we have Monster at My Window by Poeta da Cabra. And go ahead, Rex, give that a read, please.
Monster at My Window by Poeta da Cabra. There's a monster at my window, scaring me off to death, now fogging up the glass with his evil bated breath. Why does he scare children whilst tucked up in our beds? Hope he doesn't break in and tear me up in shreds. He seems to be crying out, clutching at his throat. Started to read his lips, decided I should take note. Can I have a glass of water? I'm so thirsty I could die. Monster was a poor old man. He was parched and very dry. Seemed like he had Alzheimer's. Poor man was lost and all alone. And begged my mom and dad, return him to the nursing home.
Great read there, Rex. Could I get you to comment on that one first? Because I'm grabbing a link for something.
All right. This one's not so much the monster. It's the play that it's the one who got away from the nursing home, decided he was going to take a night trip around the park, so to speak. He's not up to doing anything. He's just lost, alone, and out of sorts. The back angle hits the, seemed like he had Alzheimer's. Poor man was lost and all alone. Back to the nursing home. That's it. Hey, he took a runner and couldn't wait to get back.
Yep, exactly. I like that. I like that. Cool comment there. But yeah, you know, as always, you know, Poeta is a great rhyming poet. I like the how he tells a story with this. And I like how it's another one that has a twist at the end. That idea that the monsters that we see aren't always what we think they are. I really like the questions like, why does he scare children whilst tucked up in our beds? Hope he doesn't break in and tear me up in shreds. And then, of course, the fact that the monster, or rather the old man, then asks, can I have a glass of water? I'm so thirsty I could die. Monster was a poor old man. He was parched and very dry. And to me, I like how this speaks on the idea that oftentimes we mistake people for monsters who really are just people that need help. So excellent write and very well done. And all right. Up next, I have one more write that I got permission for the skeleton dance contest. And I wanted to make sure to get this one up because it was the bronze winner in that contest. And this is Still Kicking by Ima Rima. And it goes like this. Wait, did I read the last one or did you?
I did.
Right? Okay, that's what I thought. Geez, you'd think I'd remember with it only being two people. All right, Still Kicking. We skeletons do love to dance at night in the cemetery. We do so at every chance with boned-up choreography. Nightbirds provide us music that accompanying the tapping toes in moonlit graveyard habitat with such artistic decompose. Once in a little, in a while, passerby may catch a glimpse of dancing us. Police are called, we're not sure why, back underground till ends the fuss. Once were rockettes in a past day, now our bonnets dancing away. End poem.
Great read, Pam, and this was astonishing. Wow. And I like it. I actually played out very nicely as far as the rhyme scheme. And the voice rolled into it in moonlit graveyard habitat with such artistic decomposed. It was a nice touch there. And what was it? At the bottom end. Once were rockets in the past day, now are bonnets dancing away. Yes, we are the bonnets, kicking it up alive in the graveyard. Come on down. All right.
Yeah, I did like that part too. Yeah, it was fun to read. Now, technically, it's not a sonnet because sonnets have 10 syllables per line, and this does not have consistently 10 syllables per line. But he does use the same rhyme pattern as a sonnet, and he does use the ending couplet as a sonnet. So I really think if Ima Rima wanted to, he could write sonnets because he's so very close.
A sonnet does not have to have 10 syllables. That's typically going to use run, but they can run with other variations into a syllabic count.
Okay, because the one thing I had always read is that one thing that stayed consistent was the syllable count. Okay, well that's good to know. Yeah, I had read before that the one consistency was the syllable count, but okay, cool. But yeah, I really liked this, especially that ending couplet with the humor at the end. Once were rockets in a past day, now are bonnets dancing away. Another part I really liked was the part that says, with such artistic decompose, once in a while, passerby may catch a glimpse of dancing us. Police are called. We're not sure why. I don't know. That part definitely made me laugh. That was an excellent write and very well done. And all right, let's see what we got next. That one was read. Okay. And here we go. All right. Up next, we have The Face in the Mirror by Poetic Creations. And go ahead, Rex, and give that a read.
The Face in the Mirror by Poetic Creations. There's a monster in the mirror, and I can't look away. It's what the eyes say, but they don't speak of sadness. They speak of loss, and lost you know. No wonder I never met the man. And
great read there, Rex, and a wonderful brevity about the idea of facing the monster in the mirror. And I thought the end line was especially strong with the idea of truly not knowing ourselves. So excellent write and very well done.
Well, actually, I think he does understand himself because he's looking in the mirror and understanding that there is a monster there because of what he reads within the eyes. And they don't speak of sadness. They speak of loss. So no wonder I never met the man. That could be both a reference to himself as well as his father.
I like that thought, the idea that when you look in the mirror, you see a parent. And because oftentimes we do look more like our parents as we get older. And and I like that you brought up that part about the eyes, because, you know, there is so much many ways that the eyes speak, and the fact that they reflect that sadness. So really great observation there. And all right, I'm gonna go ahead. And next one we have is actually just an extra one that was thrown on the board because we are done with the contest, right? So we have Sometimes by J. Rose Anna, and it goes like this. Sometimes it is us who are able to give others help, and sometimes it is us who humbly need the help of others. Giving help is sometimes seen as strength, and yet needing help is sometimes seen as weakness. Yet life is not so simply divided. If we always remember, we are all only human and ultimately exist for both. End poem.
Great reading. Thank you very much. A bit of truth there. It's easy to point fingers and yes, you're weak for this, you're weak for that, you're weak for everything else. But there is a duality that walks within the voice itself. And sometimes you do need the help and other times you can give the help. It's a matter of sharing. So nicely done, J. Rose. What about you?
Absolutely. I like what you have to say, and I have to agree. I really relate to this one because I remember when my son Jaron got severely burned and, you know, we started having a lot of, you know, trouble with his behavior and it was just really difficult. And before that point, it was so difficult for me to ask for help. And then I realized that, you know, at that point that I needed to, reach out and ask and for help and get help. And unfortunately, you know, there are many people that have that sense of judgment, you know, of judging people for needing help or for asking for help. And I like that he reminds us, or she reminds us, that, you know, we are all only human and ultimately we exist to both ask for help. So just a wonderful write and very well done. And all right, well, wonderful show tonight, Rex. Yes, great wrap up. It was a wonderful Halloween week. Did you want to mention some upcoming shows?
Well, it's Twisted Tuesday, What's Cooking?
Twisted Tuesday, that's going to be a fun one. Weaver is going to join us, and hopefully others will too. It's the, what's his name? The Scottish poet that writes such horrible poems. Oh, yes. William McGonagall, who was considered to be one of the absolute worst poets in history. And we just ran a couple of contests and asked people to have fun with that. And so, yeah, yeah. So, going to be fun show.
Can't be too bad if you've actually got a name for yourself. The worst poet in history. Yes, he's famous enough to be done with.
Exactly, exactly. How about for your Sunday show? You got a contest going for that, right?
Yes. Dig into the lyrics of Come Together. Is it cleverly nuanced? Is it a play on words? Or is it just nonsense song itself? Have a bit of fun. Take a line, take a stanza, mix and match, and just play with it.
Very cool. Very cool. And I thought it was so great that you picked that song because just by coincidence, either that or you were reading my mind. I have been listening to that song quite a bit for the past couple of weeks. Like it's on one of my playlists. And so I just thought that was really awesome. So I'm looking forward to that show. And Wednesday, Wednesday, 10 p.m. Eastern U.S. time is the Artist Seduction with me and Naomi. She ran the contest, which is already closed, but of course, you know, rights are always welcome. And then Thursday, 12:30 a.m. Eastern U.S. time is the Headliners Ball with Jeremy. And this week, we are going to be headlining the poetry of Pee Wee Kusin and Eric Sensen, which I'm looking forward to. And as I always like to tell people, make sure to check out all the poetry contests and topic boards, show contests and topic boards put up by our hosts and hostesses and late night poets, because you're sure to find something to inspire. And awesome show, Rex. Have a good night, and have a good night, everyone.
Good night, everybody. Thank you very much.